Welcome to episode 45 of Leading People with me, Jerry Murray. This episode is brought to you by Wide Circle, helping you make better talent decisions. To learn more, visit widecircle.eu. That's widecircle.eu. Do you want to feel and do better in life? Do you want to improve your sleep, diet, exercise, brain health, and performance? Do you know what your super habits are? And do you know what your destructive habits are? And do you know how to maintain your super habits and change your destructive habits? My guest for this episode is Dr. John Finn, who is an expert on habits and the impact they have on our lives. During our conversation, John explains how some habits can serve us very well and how others can be quite destructive. He talks about how his study of neuroscience, behavioral science, and psychology, and his work with world champions led him to develop a comprehensive toolbox that anyone can use. And stay tuned for John's tip about quick tips, as well as his special offer for you. So let's hear what he has to say. Dr. John Finn, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jerry. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here today, John. Why are you here? Well, I came across a reference to your book a few months back, and I'm pretty sure it was on LinkedIn. Somebody had posted something and referenced you, and then I thought, better check this stuff out, because it was really grabbed my attention. And I really thought this is a topic worth featuring, and thought, okay, let me read the book first, and then I'll see, and I'll maybe invite you to come on to the show. And, of course, you obliged, which I'm really grateful for. But before we talk about the book, I'm sure our listeners are curious. How did you get here? What kind of person, place, or an event stands out on your journey to where you are today? Or was there some sort of epiphany moment or two where you kind of went, this is what I need to do, or I want to do?
Sure. So when I was 18, I was advised to go to university and study something that I would find enjoyable. I'm not sure that was the best advice, to be honest with you, but that's the advice I was given. And sports science seemed to be the only thing that really grabbed my attention. So I went to university to study sports science. A big chunk of that was sports psychology. I was also a pretty decent rugby player when I was younger, and I got selected to join the student international training squad. And we were playing a warm-up game before an Australia test match. So it was like a selection game, if you like. And I was playing fullback. That was my position. We were playing, I think I was 19 at that point. We were playing against the men's professional team on a wet, cold, windy day in the north of England. The ball was very, very high up in the air. I was pretty much stood underneath the goalposts. All I had to do was catch the ball, which I'd done thousands of times before. But all I could say to myself was, don't catch the ball. Don't drop the ball. Don't drop the ball. Don't drop the ball. I didn't even drop the ball. I completely missed the ball. The opposition scored a try. I got substituted. Right around that time, I ruptured one of my quad muscles. So it was kind of the end of my rugby career in any kind of high-level sense. Mm. And I was really getting into the sports psych. Obviously, my inability to deploy what I'd been learning in the classroom was quite striking to me as well. So I decided that if I couldn't play sport at the highest level, I wanted to help others. So I made it my mission to become as good a performance psychologist as I could be. I did a master's in that area, did a PhD in that area. So I've worked in performance psychology, in resilience, leadership science for over 20 years now. And I've dedicated to my life to making it as easy as possible for people to be at their best.
So the epiphany moment was dropping the ball.
Well, that's connected to it, definitely. Yeah, you know, it was the striking thing of you're supposed to know about these ideas, but I wasn't deploying them. But also that's the whole problem with, and I've got three psychology-related degrees, and I learned loads of great stuff through that process, but they're all based on the assumption if you can get people to know what they should be doing, they'll be able to do it. And of course, brains don't work like that. We don't do what we know we should do. We do what we're in the habit of doing. You know, most people understand and agree that it's a good idea to walk 10,000 steps a day and walk and eat five portions of fruit and vegetables. Yet most people don't do that. And in the UK, the National Health Service currently spends over half its annual budget treating diseases that emerge because people don't do those things. You know, the NHS is the biggest company in Europe. So we don't do what we know we should do. We do what we're in the habit of doing.
Right.
And that's why I'm so passionate about helping people to build better habits. And habits are not just the bad habits that we think about. They're not just physical things that we do. It's fundamentally how we think. We are, our belief systems, our biases, the vast, vast majority of what we're thinking and doing, and it's somewhere between 98% to 100%, depending on where you're at any given moment, is automatic, semi-automatic behavior, thoughts and actions. And that's what I mean when I say habits.
You're a man after my own heart, or my own habitual thinking, because I personally do a lot of training, for example, and you know, cognitively, what we're teaching people is easy. It really is easy, and if you get good at explaining it, you can make it easy for a six-year-old to understand. And it doesn't mean any of it's going to stick or work in the real workplace. And yet there's a sort of almost a tendency today, if you look at sometimes on LinkedIn, the amount of people's courses they've done and what they've done is watched a video, you know, or watched a series of videos, and now they're citing that they've got the skills to do something. Now, I'm not able to qualify whether they do or not, but there's a little bit more to it than that. And that's going to get us nicely into the book. The book is called The Habit Mechanic: Fine-Tune Your Brain and Supercharge How You Live, Work, and Lead. So I think you started to touch on it here. What was the purpose of writing the book? Based on top of all the other work you're doing, what was the purpose in sitting down? Because it's quite a challenge to write a book, right? So what was the purpose in doing that?
Yeah, so strategically, our mission is to make it as easy as possible for people to be their best, and very specifically to use what I'd call first principle thinking to help them to be their best, to help them to build habits that make it easier for them to be healthy, happy, high performing, build great cultures, great teams if they want to. And for the last 20 plus years, that's the work that me and my team have been doing. We've been running training, coaching from everywhere, from elite sport, business, in education, and refining how we understand to help people to be at their best. And as we've gone on that journey, getting better and better at helping people to actually build better habits that make their life easier. And we've worked with easily over 10,000 people now. So the book really is all the training we've developed written up as a book. So this is not a typical, what I see, like the New York Times bestseller, here's one idea repeated 10 times across 10 chapters. This is the vast majority of things that I know and the tools that myself and my team use to help people to get better. So it's not a normal book. It's a manual for life. It's a toolkit for success. It's got about 33 tools in there that show you how you can start to analyze your habits and build new ones in areas of your life, ranging from sleep, diet and exercise, managing stress, building confidence, performing under pressure, being more focused, productive, getting better work-life balance, supercharging how you learn. And then once you've become a habit mechanic, then you can start to learn to become what we call a chief habit mechanic. So it's got a toolkit in there that shows you as a leader how you can build better leadership habits and also build cultures that make it really easy for your team members to build lots of new helpful habits. So the book was, you know, it's almost a philanthropic exercise. It's here's everything we know about doing this. We just want to make it as easy as possible for people to do this. And the book actually uniquely is coupled with an app. So we've got an app and a book that work together. Mm-hmm. So we know the power of apps for triggering habits and lots of other clever things. So yeah, we just want to help people to do better and, you know, build a community of like-minded people. So that's why we wrote the book.
Mm. It is for all our listeners out there. It is like a manual. It's like your course accompaniment, which would help people even go back as a reference book afterwards. If they'd done some courses with you, they'd have it as a reference. Now, I think one thing I'd like to kind of explore for I'm going to kind of look at the title of the book a little bit to further develop our conversation. I think one thing that is always useful to point out is that habits are not necessarily bad things, because, you know, they actually help us be very efficient. We don't really want to relearn every morning how to brush our teeth or how to make a cup of tea or coffee, right? So the concept of a habit itself is really how the brain becomes efficient, isn't it? And but sometimes the what that leads to isn't helping us produce the outcomes we'd like to produce, whether it's in sport, in our private life, in our work life, etc. So you use the term habit mechanic. So I'd like to start with tell our listeners a bit more about this idea of how habits work, and what was the rationale or reasoning behind using the analogy of a mechanic? Is it just because you've got a big sports car collection, or is it because you had some other reason for it? So off you go.
Yeah, so our brains run on habits. Our brain's number one operating rule is to conserve energy, because for most of our existence, energy has been a scarce resource as a Homo sapiens. Yeah. When I talk about our existence, there hasn't always been a supermarket on every corner. And actually, we saw in the pandemic how quickly people panic when they think there's not going to be any energy supplies, in other words, foods available, and the supermarket shelves emptied almost overnight. Mm-hmm. So our brain is designed to conserve energy, and habits are the most energy-efficient way of doing things. So that's why it's trying to turn everything into a semi-automatic process. And it's not just, you gave some great habitual examples, but, you know, the way that we make a decision about someone we just met, we do that in about 4 seconds. That's not a conscious, logical process. That's a habitual process. So habits drive our belief systems. They drive our biases. People may be familiar with Daniel Kahneman's work.
Yeah.
Kahneman's talking about habits. He's talking about thinking habits. He calls them heuristics. And that's why I think I think pop psychology is doing a really bad job on explaining what habits actually are, because they present them as this sort of important idea, but it's only one part of the jigsaw puzzle. It isn't. It's driving everything that we're doing. Mm. And when we can understand that, it's much easier to start being healthier and happier and at our best. The idea then of a mechanic is our approach always, you know, we've worked a lot in the States. And in fact, the first week I was working in the States, we were actually working for one of our City of London clients. They'd merged with a hedge fund from Denver, actually. So we were doing a lot of work for the London office. So we went over to Denver to do some work there. And at the end of the week of training, a guy who wasn't in that last session came and sought me out. He just said, I just want to tell you, Dr. Finn, that the sessions I've had with you this week have changed my life. Mm. And I've been in therapy all my life. Mm. And that got my attention. And I had a conversation. And I think it's because the therapy he'd been having was designed to keep him coming back again week after week after week. Whereas we actually want to empower people to coach and manage themselves. So therefore, if you can understand how your brain works in the way that a car mechanic understands how a car engine works, we've got a much better chance of actually making the adjustments to get it working again properly. So we want to empower people to become habit mechanics. Mm-hmm. So they've got a much better understanding of how their brain actually works, so that they can be purposeful and deliberate in practicing more helpful things that allows them to build more helpful habits.
Hmm. Well, I suppose then, I mean, that's a great explanation. Thanks for explaining it that way. I mean, I like your little story about the therapy. Unfortunately, the therapists out there might not be so happy, but it is true that often therapy just gets people to revisit everything and never actually helps them get out. It puts them back into a worse state than they were in. Sometimes when they first started. But we get to the state thing maybe in a few minutes.
That was his experience, by the way. I'm not saying that's all therapists, but yeah.
Talking, no, it's not all therapists, but yeah, it can happen.
Talking doesn't change behaviour. We know that. So yeah. To change behaviour, we have to practice doing things differently. Mm. And again, this is... That understanding hasn't always been obvious, which I'm sure we'll get into, because most of the ways that we're trying to help people to be at their best are not actually based on how brains actually work.
No.
Because we've only started to really understand how brains actually work in quite recent history, whereas most of the models and approaches we're using to help people do better are not from recent history. They're, you know, 60, 70, 80, 100 years old.
Well,
so yeah, just to clarify that. We don't want to offend anyone, Jerry. So.
No, if we haven't lost any of our Freudian-based psychotherapists out there now, let's stay tuned, because this is as much educational as anything else that we're trying to achieve here. But when we get down to the next part of the title, we get fine-tune and supercharge. So I guess that these have interesting distinctions, because fine-tune, I guess, is presupposing that a lot of things work well and that occasionally they go out of tune, in the engine sense, I guess, or, well, even musical sense, you'd still want to keep your guitar in tune. And then the supercharge bit. So maybe let's separate those two out, make some distinctions about what your intention was around fine-tuning and supercharging.
Yeah, we know that we can change, but there are some limiting factors to our ability to do that. And in the book, we show our unique habit mechanic coaching and change management system. Mm-hmm. And that's centered on what we call the 9-action factor model. Mm-hmm. So we have a model that explains how change happens, and we show you how to use that model to help yourself make positive change, but also help others, your team, your business, people in your organization to make positive change. One of the core factors in being able to make change is that we can only make tiny changes. We have a very limited short-term memory. Can only hold 5 to 7 bits of information at a time. We can only hold an idea in our short-term memory for 30 seconds. If we don't repeat within 30 seconds, we forget. So we can make change, but it's one tiny change at a time. So we're not looking to radically re-overhaul the engine. We're just looking to fine-tune. So we give people tools that they can, starting with just 2-minute things they can do every day, to start making tiny little adjustments to fine-tune the engine, if we're using the engine as a metaphor for the brain. And then when we start to consistently deploy those tools, practice those things, then we're going to get more what we call habit mechanic intelligence. So more awareness of ourselves, of our habits, of both our super habits and our destructive habits. And what we're going to start to be able to recognize is that if we can just actually... I mean, there might be hundreds of habits running what I'm thinking and doing right now. There might be thousands. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to quantify, but there's a lot. But what we've learned in our work is that some of those habits are disproportionately beneficial. Some of my habits are disproportionately beneficial. Some habits are disproportionately negative. We call the ones that are disproportionately beneficial super habits. Mm-hmm. We call the ones that are disproportionately negative destructive habits. So as I start to go on this habit mechanic journey and learn more about myself and develop my habit mechanic intelligence, I'm going to start to uncover what are my super habits and what are my destructive habits. And by getting rid of some of the destructive habits and just building a few more super habits, we can really supercharge our health and our happiness. And what I see in myself, but also speaking to other people, is that when you deploy these tools, so the things I've done today, my habit mechanic, the habit mechanic tools I've used, they're going to save me, I know, at least 1 hour today. At least 1 hour. And I think it's more than that. So I think that using those ideas, now I've got a really good sense of how to use them, I'm probably up to 25%, if not more, efficient and effective every day than if I wasn't using those ideas. Mm-hmm. And what I see that when, if we just get people using the tools for a week, just doing something like a daily tea plan and a 3-to-1 reflection, Mm-hmm. People report that that makes them at least 10% more efficient and effective just in 1 week. So that's what we're getting to when we talk, when we use that very specific language, fine-tuning and supercharging.
Now, a word from one of our sponsors.
How much impact and influence do your leaders really have? Could increased self-awareness make them more effective at building relationships, achieving results, and providing direction? At Wide Circle, we have the tools to provide these valuable insights so you can ensure that your leadership development programs are targeting the right areas. And we train you to use these tools so you don't need us to do it all for you. To learn more, go to widecircle.eu/leadership-influence, all one word.
Okay, and I think, I suppose, if I'm going to just step in a little bit to the shoes of our listeners here and process this, some people are turned off all of this kind of stuff because it's just too big. It's just like, oh, somebody wants to fix me, and am I broken, life is too short for this, etc. And what you're doing is you're taking what the brain likes, which is small chunk, right? And you're saying to people, if you could just make that one little, test out one thing and notice if it makes a difference, you can build on that. Is that, would that be more or less capturing in a more sort of layman's terms? Is it exactly what you're trying to say? Is just like, just start with, try out some of these little exercises. They're probably going to help you. And once you realize they help you, you can add some more. Would that be true?
Yes, exactly. That's it. So the toolkit, nothing we ever teach people is prescriptive. It's the toolkit for people to test and try out, and you learn as you go. But you've got to start somewhere. So the daily tea plan, which is in chapter one, you know, that's very, very, very simple tool, but it's literally taken, well, I'd say 20 plus years to get it so simple, but it's based on really, really powerful science. So yeah, we're taking what we've learned from working with over 10,000 people, where we've refined our processes and we've got to that point where we know people are more likely to make successful change if we just break it down into these tiny tools.
Right. And the last part of the title, I really like it, because you put life, work, and then lead. And, you know, we have this concept in the world of work called work-life balance. And it kind of skews everything in people's heads, because work seems to have some sort of just grammatically dominance. Whereas if you start off thinking about what kind of life do I want to have, because we tend to live before we work, and we tend to hopefully live after we finish working. So just talk a little bit, unpack that, about how life and then work and then lead, if you ever put yourself in that position, how that comes together itself as a system. And maybe you can then talk a bit about something you mentioned earlier on, because you talk about this DES, right? And that really stood out for me, you know, that this is such a foundational, fundamental aspect to really get your head around and to work on. Because I think you can, other things, if they're not built on a solid foundation, can sometimes not really produce the results that you want, maybe take up a lot of time and effort, and you're wondering, why am I not able to do that? So let's talk about life, work, or live, work, and lead, and then get into what you call the DES.
Yeah, so my brain runs me. Mm-hmm. Brains run you. Mm-hmm. Or your brain runs for you. The brain of the listeners runs the listeners. Brains run your team, if you've got a team. Brains run your organization. Mm-hmm. We don't normally think of it like that, but that's the reality. And what we also now know is that habits run brains, or brains run on habits. Mm-hmm. And it's harder than ever because of the VUCA world, the volatile, uncertain, complex, volatile, uncertain, ambiguous world. Volatile, uncertain, complex, ambiguous world. Or what I call now the VUCA world on steroids, which is the post-pandemic world. Mm-hmm. The only constant is change. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Change is getting faster and faster and faster. So my grandparents, for example, they worked in factories. They started mm-hmm. working in the factory when they were 14. Mm-hmm. And once they'd learned their main trade, maybe by their late teens, they were pretty set, you know. Mm-hmm. The job that they were doing wasn't going to change too much until the day they retired. They didn't take any work home with them. There was no emails. They started at a set time. They finished at a set time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, life was a bit simpler. Now we live in a world where, because of technological innovation, our work is changing all the time. You know, and we just had a real speed up of that with the sort of forced introduction of hybrid work structures mm-hmm. because we now have the technology, thankfully, to be able to do that. So our brain is running everything that we're doing ultimately. And if it isn't working well, mm-hmm. we're not going to be able to be healthy and happy and feel good about our day-to-day lives. That means we've got no chance of turning up and performing well for work, which mm-hmm. also dents our ability to, you know, live a meaningful life. Mm-hmm. So if we want to be our best, we have to start with getting our brain working really well. Mm-hmm. And for me, what the picture that I just painted about the modern world means that work and life are getting closer and closer together. They're almost inseparable now for many people mm-hmm. because the same space that they have their family conversations in is the same space that they're literally speaking to their clients or their mm-hmm. their work colleagues. Mm-hmm. So if we want to be healthy and happy and at our best, we've got to start by getting our brain working really well. And, you know, everything that we do, every minute of our 24-hour period impacts on brain function. And that brings us on to how do we get, what's the basis of good brain function? Well, there are, I'd say, four core ingredients. One is diet, one is exercise, one is sleep. And that's as you were referring to, diet, exercise, and sleep. If we don't get those things right, our brain doesn't work properly. And, you know, we don't often think about diet in relation to brain function. That's the first thing you should think about when you're putting things into your body. Mm-hmm. Because if your brain, if the things you're putting into your body are not good for your brain function, then that's a problem. And unfortunately, most of the foods we have access to now are not necessarily particularly good for brain function. But the fourth factor is good social connectivity. Mm-hmm. So we need good sleep, good diet, good exercise, good social connectivity. Connected into that, that's one part of the equation for being, I'd say, happy and at your best in the world that we live in. The second part of the equation is what I call hedonism, letting your hair down, having some fun. It's easier than ever to do that. To give in to short-term gratification because of the world that we live in. It's just easier than ever to eat what you want to eat, not go to sleep if you don't want to go to sleep because you can watch the next episode on Netflix, mm-hmm. overindulge,
yeah.
Procrastinate on mentally challenging work and do the easy things instead, check your social media. But it's important to do some of that stuff. The third part of the equation is what is underpinned by what we call eudaimonia. We call it a habit mechanic development. This is about mm-hmm. personal growth, doing meaningful work, yeah. delaying short-term gratification so you can make progress and grow yourself. So there's a three-part equation there: good sleep, good diet, good exercise, good social relationships, and then striking a balance between hedonism and eudaimonia. So if we want to be at our best in our lives and at work, we've got to get those three things right. And then leadership is connected into that. But if you want to be a great leader, the first thing you need to do is make sure that you're functioning really well. That's the first part of what I'd say is a four-part equation, which we can talk about.
Yeah, and as a leader, if we want to get there, because after all, this podcast is called Leading People, it gives me a lot of scope. And at the same time, you know, When we talk about leaders, and I've had several people come on the show here and program and talk about this over the last couple of years, One characteristic that you kind of want a leader to have is become a role model for other people, because, you know, it's, they have more influence sometimes than they realize, even when they're not there. And so, you know, and when they are there, people actually hang a lot on their words, and do they walk that talk? So in a way, if you want to move into that type of world of leadership, you really probably need to understand this stuff quite well, because you'll ideally want your own people to embrace much of this, right?
Yeah, so the book is structured as it is for that reason. So the first thing you need to do, if you want to learn to be a great leader, is learn how to become a great habit mechanic. And that's connected to the role model part of our leadership model. That's one element. But it is. It's people seeing what you're doing. You know, one great example, I think, is a role model that's sort of really embedded into the company is James Dyson. Mm-hmm. And he talks about failing, and he wants his piece. So he role models failure, for example. But we break. So in the book, we have four leadership self-assessment tools. One is for the role model. Mm-hmm. One is for what we call the action communicator. So how mm-hmm. you communicate with people so you can get them to take positive action.
Yep.
The third area is called the cultural architect. So how do you set up a culture that makes it super easy for people to develop the new habits that will allow the team and the organization to achieve its mission? And then the fourth part is the SWAP coach. SWAP is self-watch, aim, plan. It's just our most simplest little change model that we use. So can you actually help others to build new helpful habits on a one-to-one basis? So in the book, we have four self-assessments. So we break leadership down into, I'd say, about 130 tiny little behaviours. And the thing is to go through the self-assessments and just pick one area to work on. And also, the thing I'd say we need to realize as leaders is that everyone in our team has a leadership impact. So leadership isn't just a title or a position. It's about behavior. And everyone in your team is impacting each other's behavior by how they behave. It could be a tiny negative impact because they tend to roll their eyes in a meeting when they don't like something. It could be a tiny positive impact because they're not along with you. It could be a huge negative impact. It could be a huge positive impact, but everyone's got impact. So we need everyone in the team to empower everyone in the team to take responsibility for their leadership behavior. And they don't need to work on all four elements of the what we call our team power leadership model, mm-hmm. but they certainly need to work on at least two of them. I'd say the role model and the action communicator. We want everyone in the team to be getting better at those areas. But again, it's about habits. And that, you know, I spent a long time using the leadership psychometrics and doing lots of leadership training. And I was always disappointed with the results because all the leadership stuff out there was about give them more knowledge. Mm. Leaders don't do what they know they should do. They do what they're in their habit of doing. So it's harder than ever to be a leader in the world we live in. We see middle managers getting really squeezed at the moment because it's so hard for them. They're kind of caught in the middle. We have to empower leaders to build better habits. And that's what, you know, the habit mechanic approach is all about. And the tools that we use to help leaders to do that are all in the book.
Yeah. I mean, it's a fascinating challenge. I mean, I totally agree with what you're saying. In fact, I know organizations where they don't really allow their leaders, or they feel it's inappropriate to ask their leaders to go on training. They can have seminars, conferences, and that, because it's sort of deemed that when a person goes to a certain level, that they're perfect. It's almost like there's a sort of magic wand thing that goes, now you get that job, you're somehow perfect, you know? And yet, most of the complaints from people beneath that is, you know, sometimes people go on development programs for like high potential programs. I mean, I teach on some of these things. And some of the feedback you get is, why is my boss not on this? Or why is that person? It's like, it's got this really strange thing going on there that, yeah. And I think I totally would agree with you that, you know, everybody has the potential to lead without, actually leadership doesn't need authority for it to be real for a lot of people. I mean, if you ever look at a sports team, sometimes it's not the captain who has to step up, but some other players on the team will just step up and the whole team will rally around it. And that in a way is another example or embodiment of leadership in action, when somebody else can see how to rally the team and they don't have a formal position to do it. So you talk about your swap. So part of that is really, you call it self-watch. Part of it is really this idea of being self-aware. And unfortunately, self-awareness is often in short supply. So how do you teach people how to be more self-aware and self-watch? Maybe just expand on one or two of the techniques that you've developed.
Yeah, so I would say we talk about intelligent self-watching. You know, even if you're self-aware, you recognize, oh, I'm beating myself up all the time. Okay, great. But what can you do about that? So we need to be intelligent in how we self-watch. We talk about intelligent self-watching. So as a leader, you could just say, now, out of 10, where do you think you are as a leader? 10 would mean you're perfect. 1 would mean you're an absolute failure. But just give yourself a score. It doesn't matter where you are. It's just about starting to notice ourselves. For me, that simple exercise that we just did, maybe in 10, 20 seconds, is far more powerful than any psychometric tool I've seen. Because they just give you a set of beliefs about yourself, often, that are not true. And I heard very prominent neuroscientists now saying that psychometrics are about as useful as horoscopes are. So we've got to empower the individual to be more intelligent. You know, and you might not really have a good sense now of where you are out of 10. But if you start asking yourself that question every day, and it's the first question you ask yourself every day, you're going to start to develop a much better understanding of where you are as a leader. The second question then, so I might just say, okay, I think I'm a 6 out of 10 with my leadership at the moment. So I'm going to make a small aim, which is the A in swap. My aim is to move myself from a 6 up to a 6.5. So that's my aim. I want to make a positive movement. I'd love to get to a 10 every day, but you know, my habits are nowhere near that at the moment. And then the plan, we need to, because you know, a goal or an aim without a plan is just a wish, it won't come true. If I was going to create a plan to do that, I'd go to one of the habit assessment tools. I might start with the role model. Just go through the role model self-assessment. It takes me a few minutes, and I can pick one area out of that thing that I'm going to work on, and I can create a little habit building plan that's going to give me a better chance of putting into practice some more positive leadership behaviors today. That if my plan's good, that will give a chance of that leadership behavior turning into a habit. So that's what the swap is, a real simple tool.
Yeah. And when you just talk about the psychometric stuff, I mean, the first, kind of what probably pops into a lot of people's head is, you know, there's a huge amount of personality type assessments out there. And is there really any evidence in the world of personality that a particular type of personality is, it can link to certain types of habits, or is that just part of what you're finding with looking at these personality-based tools?
The challenge we face is that the personality-based tools, you know, the Myers-Briggs, for example, was developed over 100 years ago. Until very recently, and I'd say, you know, up until about 20, 25 years ago, even the top neuroscientists in the world were pretty compelled that when you stopped physically growing, your brain stopped changing in any substantial way. So we were very heavy leaning towards it's nature. Our genes dominate our behavior. Our type dominates what we're going to get good at. Now we know that that just isn't true. What we've learned over the last 25 years or so is just how powerful practice is. So now we don't have a nature-nurture debate anymore. We have a nature plus nurture. So yeah, we have genes that give us a predisposition to certain behaviors and certain ways of thinking. The challenge we face in the world we live in is that whatever capabilities we currently have to be good at our job, we're pretty sure that in 6 months or 12 months' time, those capabilities are not going to be the perfect match for what we need to be good at in 12 or 6 months' time, because the world is changing so quickly. So actually, what we need in all of our people, starting with our leaders, is people that actually are really open to working on themselves and developing themselves. So yeah, we've got certain predispositions to be good at things, but if we don't practice, we're never going to fulfill our potential in those things. You know, so David Beckham might have had certain predispositions to become a great footballer, but if he never practiced playing football, he wouldn't become a professional footballer.
No.
If Usain Bolt never practiced running quickly, he would never have won, you know, the gold medal at the Olympic Games or the world record. And I think the whole point of the psychometrics is that they present a real a bias towards your genetic, that you've either got this stuff or you don't have it. And that is not what science is telling us.
No.
So, yeah, that's where I see that they're a problem. I'd like to, in the future, develop some, I'd say, more neuroscience-based psychometrics. I wouldn't call it that, but, you know, neuroscience ways of understanding more about ourselves.
Yeah.
But I don't think the ones that are out there are very powerful. I think it's better literally just to engage in that intelligent self-watching exercise, and that's what all the tools in the book are designed to help you to do that.
Yeah. You're kind of touching into that interesting area of epigenetics there, aren't you? And
we've got genes,
nature and nurture, but actually working as a system, nature and nurture working as a system rather than as isolated, as a dichotomy where you argue whether one or the other is the most prominent. They actually interact, don't they,
all the time? And this is relatively new insight. So, you know, even there are some famous studies out there, they're twin studies. And they basically argue that the only reason that a twin could be different is because of their genes, because their environment is pretty much the same when they grow up. That is utter nonsense. Mm. It's utter nonsense. Every experience you have has an impact on your behavior. And I'm talking, someone could shout something at you to right now, and that experience lasts 5 seconds. That could be taken with you for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Two of my closest friends are twins. They are genetically identical twins, as it's defined in science, but they are very, very different people. And they are very good at some similar things, but they're also very different at similar things.
Mm.
So, you know, I think chapter 5 in the book, I really start to get into what I call our superpower, which is learning. We are learning all of the time. Whatever new story you know right now in your head from today, you didn't know it this morning. We are learning and developing all the time. The trouble is that when we're at school, we get taught that we're quite fixed, that you're just quite good at maths, but you'll never be very good at English. You're just very good at English, but you're not very scientifically minded. It's just a nonsense. You get good at what you practice. So, yeah. I feel like I'm getting on my pedestal there, but yeah, that's about, you know, epigenetics.
That's what I wanted. And, you know, everybody listening to this has learned something in the last 40 minutes or so. And, you know, I think I have a sense, John, we could probably continue talking about this. We could explore deliberate practice. We could explore so many wonderful areas. And unfortunately, I've kind of set myself a time limit on these programs for the sake of the listeners, just to give them, if they've been on a nice long walk now, which I would recommend, this is the best thing to do when you're listening to this podcast, is get some exercise and let your brain process while you're moving. Just to finish up, just getting in now. A couple of quick tips now, where, you know, anybody out there listening to this program now could go away straight after they stop and they get back from their walk. They could just think, right, okay, give them a couple of things. Here's a couple of things you could start doing and just notice the difference. Coming up in the final few minutes, John shares his tip about quick tips. And has a special offer especially for you. So let's find out what this is.
Okay, so I don't believe in quick tips. They don't work. They're a waste of time. So I'm going to challenge you on that, Jerry. But I want to give you something, because we're in a culture now where we've been led to believe that if we could just know something different, that will change our behavior. Mm. And for me, they're fuel fixed mindsets, because I tried that and it didn't work, and therefore it won't work.
Mm.
So I would much rather people, if you're going to spend some time trying something, do it properly. right now in our Habit Mechanic University app, the audiobook is free. Whether it will be free when this is released or not, I'm not sure. Oh, no, but it will. So you will be able to get a free trial of the audiobook. So you can come back from the walk, you can download the app, and you can start to listen to some of this stuff without buying the book if you don't want to. So I think we're going to leave a two-week trial on the audiobook. So I'd say three exercises from the book through a leadership lens. The one exercise, which is in chapter, I was just labeling this before, and it's a really simple thing to do, but I wouldn't say it's a quick tip. It's in chapter 27, so you can listen to this. It's our 5-stage team power model. So you can basically score your team on each of the 5 stages really quickly. So where do I think my team's at on what we call me power conditioning? Where do I think it's at in terms of the community base camp, group climbing support, campfire discussions, and group climbing review really quickly? And that will start to get you thinking about some of your team's habits, the helpful habits and the unhelpful habits. The second thing you could do is you could go, and this starts from chapter 28, and it's chapter 29. And in fact, in the app, also in the free trial, you can go into the what's called your toolkit section. You can actually do these self-assessments in the app. So you can do the leadership self-assessments to assess yourself as a role model, as an action communicator, as a cultural architect, and as a swap coach. And then the third thing I'd say to think about is, how can you get your team members to start doing exactly the same things to empower them to be better leaders? Because actually, as a great leader, you want to empower your team members to be working on themselves as leaders. So are you going to get all your team members to do the role model self-assessment and the cultural and the action communicator self-assessment? And just by doing those really simple self-assessments, you're going to have a much better understanding of where your team is at currently, and some real simple practical things you can start to do to start building better leadership performance habits and team performance habits. So hopefully that goes much further than quick tips, and it gives people some really meaty things to get their teeth into.
Right. Well, and of course that will then lead them into a swap, right, exercise, because they'll be starting the process of self-watching through the assessment, right? And then the question is, what's that one little thing they're going to start working on, and how are they going to plan? And then they're starting to learn the art of habit mechanic, right?
So this is going to give you a much better chance of starting to build a new habit. And in the app, we instruct you how you can start doing that. So by the time you listen to this, the Habit Mechanic University app, which is available in both the Apple Store, it's an iOS app, and also a Android app, so it's in the Google Play Store. You can download that and you can start doing these exercises straight away, because there's a 2-week free trial on the subscription.
Okay. And I believe you have a special offer for our listeners. And I also wanted to, I'm sure people want to know, how do they get in touch with you, LinkedIn, your website, etc. So what's the special offer you have for our listeners?
Yeah, so the first 5 people that reach out to me on LinkedIn, so you can find me on LinkedIn, it's Dr. John Finn, and it's JonFinn. I'm sure there'll be a link somewhere around the podcast. Reach out to me, tell me that you've heard Jerry's podcast, and I will give the first 5 people an extra month's free subscription to the Habit Mechanic University app. So that's the offer. So if you want a month's free subscription, reach out, and the first 5 people that do that, I will give that to you.
And John, you practice what you preach, because the whole purpose is that the habit will have to be formed, and it's not just a one-hit wonder. They got to go in and work through stuff and to form the new habits.
So also, Tougher Minds is my consultancy, it's my award-winning consultancy, Tougher Minds, which is .co.uk. I'm sure there'll be a link for that. And if you want to get the book and the app actually work together uniquely, That's on Amazon. It's on, you know, all the major online book retailers. It's an audio book. I did the audio book. The book is 14 and a half hours long. So if you like my voice, that's good news. If you don't, it's bad news. But I felt it would be more authentic if I did the audio book. And I do practice what I preach. You know, I'm on the app every day. I'm posting my tea plan. I'm posting my reflections. We've got a growing community on there that all support each other. So, yeah, if you want to start building new helpful habits, give it a try. And I'm sure you're going to get really positive results, not only for your life, but also for work performance, but also performance as a leader. And if you want to get your team on there as well, that's perfect, because you can all start to use, you know, a central pillar of our approach is a shared language, a shared toolkit, because we know that if everyone's got the shared understanding, it's easier to help and support people building these habits that we all kind of understand. So that's why it's structured like that.
Okay, so I'll put lots of links in the show notes for our listeners. For our regular listeners, they will automatically access those. And if you haven't already subscribed to the podcast, please do. John Finn, thanks enormously for sharing your insights, tips, and wisdoms with myself and our listeners today.
Thank you, Jerry, and thank you to everyone for listening. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode. You'll find details of what we covered in the show with links, etc., in the show notes. Please share your key takeaways from today's guest and let your friends and colleagues know about the podcast. Oh, and if there's a particular author or leading thinker you'd like me to interview, just get in touch and I'll do my best to get them on the show. This episode was brought to you by Wide Circle, helping you make better talent decisions. To learn more, visit widecircle.eu. That's widecircle.eu. Until next time.